My name is Jewel. I am an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here and grateful to be sober, and it's already touched me. I love those moments that I'm allowed to have, that I get to truly be grateful for my sobriety. And I would love to tell y'all that I'm grateful all the time for it, but on occasion, apparently, I take it for granted, maybe. And I had the opportunity last night to be at a meeting with a lot of y'all who are in this room, and I got to thank y'all, because I felt the presence of God in that room with us greater than I think I felt it in quite some time. And when you can be in a room of complete strangers, and as everybody is sharing, they're sharing you, it was overwhelming. It was overwhelming that y'all weren't saying just a little bit of me. Y'all were describing me like perfectly. Every piece of what each person was sharing. And that's a pretty neat deal for me. And so I want to thank you already. I've already had the time of my life up here with y'all. Jeez, it's Friday. I hate to set the bar for y'all, but I'm truly looking forward to it, you know. I want to thank Dirk. I know he's not here, but Dirk Seibert has been one of those men that I have got the opportunity to see in my sobriety. And I'm going to cry, and I don't care. It's totally cool. I say that because I used to never cry, or I didn't where y'all could see me. Dirk Seibert has been one of those men that are people in Alcoholics Anonymous that has demonstrated the principles of this program so wonderfully. Just and such a gentleman. And I hate that he's not here. And y'all, please keep him in your prayers, definitely. But Dirk had asked me to speak, and I'm truly grateful that he did that. My sobriety date is June 29, 2003. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. Her sponsor has a sponsor, and her sponsor has a sponsor. I sponsor women who also sponsor women who are sponsoring women who sponsor women. I have a home group. I recently changed home groups, Quad City Groups of Alcoholics Anonymous in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Sobriety, sponsor, and home group, yeah. If I don't say anything else tonight, I want to make sure that I do not take credit for my sobriety, because I don't. It is only through the process and application of the 12 steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, a most powerful and loving relationship with God that I established through that process and direct sponsorship. Those are the reasons why I'm standing before you sober today and any other given day. I do not keep myself sober. Never could, and I know that I never can. What I get to have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. You know, and some days my spiritual condition is, you know, it's minimal at best, and the grace of God keeps me sober for one more day. And that's pretty good for a drunk like me. So I want to make sure of that. I want to thank Ashley. Ashley is a lady that I've had the pleasure of sponsoring for the past little over 4 years, and thank you for loading up in the car with me again, because that's what we used to do. I used to just pick her up and go get in the car, and we would just head off to different roundups and different things like that. And so thank you, Lee and Evan. I've known these guys for years, and so there they are. And it's just a good deal. It's just a good deal. You know, I get to be here with y'all. I've been taught to share with y'all in a general way what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And that's, you know, we're going to see what happens. You know, I prayed before. I actually, it was pretty cool. I didn't know where I was going to speak. And so I come out of the room, and I seen this sign. It said chapel. And me and Lee were talking about it earlier, and I don't know why I'm attracted to chapels these days, because I used to never be attracted to chapels or anything like that. And so I came over here earlier. It was the coolest thing. And I think somebody was here anyway. So me and God kind of had a chance to chat and pray, and so we'll see what happens. Hey, this is okay though, right? Okay, sweet. Say breaking the rule right out the gate. No drinking, I will. Anyway, so yeah, in a general way. So I drank, and I was really bad at drink, and you know the thing about my drinking, looking back on it now, man, I drank alcoholically right out the gate. And alcohol and all of that really didn't appeal to me. I had grown up in a home where I'd seen the really not not so pretty effects of alcohol, to put it mildly. And it just really didn't appeal to me. And there was this idea in my head that I was not going to end up like that, you know? And so I really wasn't attracted to the idea of drinking. I don't know. I drank. And looking back on it now, it's really weird because before I wouldn't have thought that there was any consequences early on. And I don't know if that's in comparison to the consequences that would eventually take place. Those seem so minor. But looking back on it now, you know, there were, like right out the gate, like I changed who I hung around with. My mom decided that she didn't care for me being at home when I was 17 because I was bad not to come home on occasion. And some different, I blew off a college scholarship. You know, just things like that that were taking place that at the time I didn't think anything about it. And looking back on it now, I think, well, those are some pretty serious consequences. But really didn't think about it. And in comparison to where I took me to, they will be nothing in comparison to where I took me to. I don't talk bad about alcohol because thank God for alcohol. I believe it kept me alive long enough to find Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sorry, let me scratch that. I didn't find y'all. I wasn't looking. and if I'd have been looking or if somebody had told me this is what it's about, I would have not come. I'm one of those people that my sobriety date I didn't pick. If you'd have told me a week before, a month before, that I would be coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and picking up I would have told you no. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't be doing that. So I drank, and I didn't stop drinking. The only thing that took place with my drinking is my rationalizing and my justifying for it. I'm a fixer. This idea in the big book that talks about the actor who can wrest satisfaction out of this world if only he manages it well, that was me. And I think that was me at like, I don't know, six. And because I had this idea that if I could just get everything lined up, it'll be okay. And I'm good on putting on a show. Like, if you were to ask me how I'm doing, I'll tell you, man, I'm great. I'm good, you know, and be dying on the inside, you know, be dying on the inside. And you wouldn't know that. I went to, in 2000, there was this judge in Texas, and he thought it might be a good idea if I go to A&A. And I remember when I went to the meeting, it was in Spring, Texas, and I go to this meeting, and anyway, there was this old-timer, and I don't know, like, old-timer, like, been in AA a long time. This is just old dude. He come up to me after the meeting, and he said, you know what? You're just a chameleon. And then he turned around and walked off. And I thought, who is this guy, right? He was describing me perfectly, and he didn't even know me. But you see, he did know me. And I think back on that moment, and that was the perfect description of me. And I had been that way for so long. It's like I will be whoever I need to be in front of whoever I'm in front of to get what I need from them. And I'll turn around and be whoever I need to be in front of a different person to get what I need from me and hope y'all don't compare notes, you know? And it's not about people pleasing. I'm not doing that to make you happy. I'm doing that to make me happy. I am selfish and self-centered to the core. And I have been for quite some time, so it's all about me. And I can look back, and early on, it's your acceptance, your approval, you know, your money, your sex, your whatever it is that you've got, I want, give me, and then I just toss you to the side. And that's how I lived, and that's how I lived for a long period of time. I don't know any of that stuff. I don't know anything. So I drank, and I drank alcoholically, and, you know, I some of the stuff that I'm going to talk about, I don't know, maybe y'all identify with. I think a lot of the drama is the same, you know, it's just kind of different. At 20 years old, I decided I would settle down and get a straight job, and so this guy asked me to marry him, and I said, okay, and seemed like a good idea, and I thought, this is what I need. I need to settle down, you know, he's a good old boy, and I need a good old boy, and now I'm going to be the wife, and I'm good at roles, you know, just give me a part to play, I'm good to go, so I'm a wife now, and so how do wives act? I don't know, but I'm going to be one, and then I'm going to be a wife, and then I started working for this company, and I started making money, so now it's all about the money, you know, so I'm playing these parts, And to be perfectly honest, and I know I'm in a church, and I can't think of a better word to describe it, but I was a corporate bitch, and I was good at it, And I did that for, I was in that marriage, and I worked for a company for the next 11 years. And my alcoholism just progressed. And during that time, I gave birth to two beautiful girls, Danielle and Tori. And in the early 90s, God, y'all were talking about your sobriety day. It just blows me away because, oh my gosh, y'all were getting sober and I was, whoo, or not getting, anyway. Early in the 90s, you know, I did kind of settle down. That's the thing about it. You know, the book talks about, you know, if there's a sufficient reason, you know, he can stop or moderate altogether. And I look back at that and I think, well, maybe that's what I was doing, but that's not what I was doing. I think I was able to, for a short period of time, you know, be able to kind of hold it together. I think that's what it was. And that's what happened. And in 95, it just kind of went downhill. And I started getting arrested. And so I'm bad to get arrested because I'm bad to drink and go places. And so I got arrested the first time. And I don't know, I didn't think that much about it except for the fact that I was in a cell and I had to share the bathroom with, never mind. It's just, I don't know, it was the orange jumpsuit really got me, to be perfectly honest with you. And it was just this idea of, oh my God, I got arrested. You know, it was just devastating. I was slinging snot in the cell with all these other girls, and I know they were thinking, God, I wish she would just, what a baby. And it was just devastating. Oh, it was terrible. Oh, I can't believe I got arrested. You know, the last time I got arrested wasn't like that at all. Wasn't like that at all. I was mad. I was angry. I didn't cry. Anyway, orange jumpsuit. So, you know, I didn't think anything much about it, really, to be honest with you. You know, it wasn't like, ooh, you really need to do something about your drinking, because I drink. There's nothing to do about my drinking. I drink. And as the problem started happening, it was not about me. It was about them. You know, because if they would just, then everything would be fine. And if he would just, and don't they recognize how awesome I am? And don't they know who I am? I got an ego bigger than this whole entire place. And I'm making money and I've got this title. And don't you know who I am? I think I came out of the womb entitled. I don't know. You know, but just this ego. And I was very successful, and I made a lot of money, and I'm not bragging because all that money is gone, but it fed into my ego and it fed into, you know what? I've got my stuff going on. I'm doing pretty good here. I'm drinking, well, yeah. And so what happened to me is not so much as outside as it was internally. Because this company that I worked for, I would normally be out of town for maybe 3 days a week. And as the years rolled on and as my alcoholism progressed, I started flying out on Mondays and flying back home on Saturdays and locking myself in the bedroom on Sundays. I'm a blackout drinker. I've been a blackout drinker right out the gate. And when I black out, I come to in places that I hope to God nobody knows about. And I piece together things that I've done that I hope to God nobody knows about. So you see, when I go home to my family, I can barely look at my husband in the face and or my children. Because you see, I know. And I'm beginning to get to the point where I hate to look at myself in the mirror because I hate who I am. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. And let me tell you, when I can't stand it the very, very most is when I'm sober. I can't stand it. So I've got to go. I've got to go. And I love moments like this. Like I said earlier, I mean, I know, right? And it's like, why do we love a moment like this? Because it was like where God has brought me to from where I was. Because it was not pretty, and I didn't even know it, you know. And I'm not going to wake up and say, well, I need to do something about my drinking. That's really not an option. And like I said earlier, I had a judge in Texas who, anyway, I come out of a blackout in Houston, Texas, and long story short, I picked up another DUI. And so I go before this judge, and he does be on probation, and there's a lot of things going on with that. And he orders me to 3 Alcoholics Anonymous meetings a week for 3 months. It's just totally ridiculous. I mean, that's a lot. And I was on probation for like a year, and I'm like, God, does this guy not know who I am? And I tried to tell the officers who I was during the arrest, and they didn't appreciate it too much. But anyway, seriously, there's a part in the book that says he would be insulted if called alcoholic. That was me. That was me. I ain't no alcoholic. I'm bad to cuss. We'll see what happens. I just really am. But anyway, so I'm not an alcoholic, but here I go to the ANA. So I got my little piece of paper because I got to get that bad boy signed. So I'm getting it signed, and I'm out the door. And I go to the meeting, and I get there right when the meeting starts. And I'm not going to talk to y'all. I don't want to get to know y'all. And I sure as heck don't want you coming up to me hugging me because I was watching y'all, right? And y'all like a bunch of hugging and stuff. And it just, oh, my God, what are they doing? And I get there, and I'm seated right where I can make my escape, you know? And I can remember sitting there, arms folded, mattering. Oh, my God, I was enraged at the idea that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's been some horrible mistake. And I want to pause for a second because I always want to give credit to the judicial system because I am a very grateful, grateful person because I am convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt, I do not come to y'all any other way. I am truly convinced of that. I do not come to y'all any other way. I don't. I don't wake up one day and want to do something about my drinking. I drink. It's not an option. We're not taking it off the table. So thank God for that, Judge. I didn't feel that way then. I'm sitting in those meetings, and I'm not like y'all, and I don't want to be like y'all. I respect what y'all are doing, like my family members had some experience. So it's nothing personal at all. It's just there's been a mistake. Clearly, I'm not like y'all. And as I'm sitting there thinking that and believing that, and I don't want to get to know y'all, what happened for me is what I believe happens when one alcoholic is talking to another alcoholic. And thank God I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, a true meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if it wasn't, y'all might have another person up here tonight. Because they talked about alcohol and their drinking and how they drank and what happened. And I identified. And it scared me. It scared the crap out of me. But isn't that what we get to do? One alcoholic talking to another. A lot of stuff was happening. It's like all my worlds were colliding. I tried so hard. I had this family world, you know, where I was the wife and the mom. And I worked really hard at that world. And then I had this job, and I was that person. And then I had this alcoholic world. And man, they started colliding bad and seeping over. And it was hard. It was exhausting. I was tired. My husband's talking divorce, the company is talking firing me, the probation officer is questioning some of the tests that's coming back, and I don't know, I said I need help. Long story short, I ended up at a treatment center in Madison, Alabama. Did this little assessment thing on me, I was thoroughly convinced I was having a nervous breakdown. They said it was alcoholism. Okay. Nervous breakdown sounded better to me. I also thought they could give me some medicine, but alcoholism it was. And so I go to this treatment center, and the detox was horrific, and it was awful. But once that was over with, man, I loved it. I loved it. It was great. It was like a vacation. Like, all right, this is all right, you know? This is cool. It's exhausting out there. I was tired. And it was like, oh, this is cool, you know, all right then. 12 steps, you know, that's what they were telling me. You know, 12 steps, get a sponsor, meetings, you know, stuff like that when you leave. And 12 steps, and they had this group room, and they had these 12 steps on the wall. And I thought, there's just 12. I'll take them myself right now. Go and knock this stuff out of the way, right? So I'm in the group room taking them, and I see a couple that don't apply to me. And you know, I left that treatment center with that attitude. It was just like, man, appreciate y'all's help. It's been good. I got this. And that's how I had rolled my whole life. I got this. I am not an ask for help kind of girl. I have never been. I have never been letting anybody close to me at all. At all. I will not let you get close to me. Are you kidding me? You'll find out. I will keep you at bay. You are not going to get that close to me to find out anything about me. I will let you see what I want you to see. Period. I don't need your help. I'm not going to ask for help. I got this. 12 steps. Sponsor, meeting, la, la, la. Right? And wow, what an ego. I had no idea. You know, sitting there saying I'm an alcoholic, I don't even know what alcoholism is. I had no idea what I was up against. Needless to say, it didn't last long either. I I left treatment, and they said, don't make any major decisions. And I thought, well, that's a good idea for all of y'all. A couple of things I had to wrap up, like divorce the husband, resign from that company, declare bankruptcy, and relocate back to Florence, Alabama. Few minor things. Because if I can get all that done, you see, if I can take care of that, then I'm going to be okay. I am an outside. I've always been that way. If I can just fix that, I'll be good. If I can do this, I'm good. You know what? I'm going to be a sober single mom. Look at me go. And I bought a station wagon because I thought it was fitting, right? It's a family car. I seriously bought a station wagon. I want y'all to know that. That for real didn't help with my sobriety at all. I don't know how long I made it. Maybe 90 days. Pick back up again wondering what? You know, I left that treatment center thinking I would be stupid to ever pick back up and drink again. That would be so dumb. And so I'm starting to get the idea about this powerless business, you know? And you know what? I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time. Needless to say, a few white chips later, it didn't work. God graced me with 7.5 months of sobriety. And then I picked back up again. And the next 2 years just got incredibly. There's this thing about this bottom, and I'd heard it in A&A before, and I was thinking, boy, I've hit my bottom. I hope I never say that. It got worse, and the idea that it can't get worse, I don't know what the heck I'm talking about if I'm going to spout off that. That's alcoholism. That's the nature of the beast. It gets worse. It gets worse. So I haven't hit my bottom. There's another one out there. You let me pick up a drink. Period. And so it got worse. And so, long story very short, the next 2 years, so I picked up this second husband in a bar, and it's a very romantic place. What are you going to do? And I'm kidding. It wasn't. I started out like drinking in some pretty nice places. And it's like toward the end of it, my God, you know what I mean? And like freaking metal detectors on the door. Had to wand you before you come in. So that's where I found him. And so he's an addict. I'm an alcoholic. We're going to live happily ever after. And I even like twisted God's will around. I don't know if y'all ever do that, but on occasion I can do that. Kind of twist it up a little bit. And I figured it was God's will for us to be together because we were there at the same time at this bar. I mean, oh my God, right? And so I moved this complete stranger into my home, and a month later I marry him, and with my two children. With my two children. And after 6 months, you know, I figured out what the problem was. Y'all probably figured it out too. It's him. He's got to go. Right? I don't want it to be my drinking. It can be anything else on the planet. I don't want it to be my drinking. I got to drink. I don't want it to be that. It's him. So I'm going to get rid of him. And here I go again with my planning. You know what I mean? And it just got, I mean, geez, we're having yard sales to keep the utilities on, you know, in order to do what he and I needed to do on a daily basis. Took a lot of money and we didn't have it. And I ain't got no problem breaking the law to get it. And so just a lot of just crazy. And so I figure I'm going to get rid of him. It's going to be fine. It's going to be good. You know, it's going to be all right. And I set my daughters down, and I tell them, you know, I pinned a lot of that on him, too. I later got a chance to make amends to that man for that. But it was him. So you see, mommy's going to work real hard. I'm going to get this taken care of. It's going to be fine. You know, because my idea now is I just need some money, and then it's going to be okay. I'm going to get some money. I'm going to get us a place. And I had to work on getting us a place because we're about to be evicted from our place. Because I can't pay. And so I take my daughters to their dad, and they're going to spend the summer with their dad. Man, I meant that more than anything. You could have hooked me up to a lie detector test, and I'd have passed with flying colors. That's exactly what I meant for my daughters to do that summer. They were going to spend some time with their dad. I was going to work extremely hard, and I was going to save up, and I was going to fix all of this. Mommy was going to make it right. And I meant that, and that was exactly what was supposed to happen. And I left when I dropped them off, and I had to drink. And Luckily for me, I got arrested again. Norris Hammond, Milton had asked me earlier if I'd known him, and him and Lorinda, I don't know if y'all know them, but they lived next door to me when I went back out, and I mean, really, like right next door. They couldn't have lived anywhere else. And when I got arrested in Arkansas, they actually had helped get me out of jail. And Lorinda Hammond had given me a baby big book. And in the front of the book, she had put, if you ever need anything, call me. That's all she did. You know, they didn't preach at me. They didn't nothing. Just call me. And I remember when I got picked up from jail, I looked at it, and I just put it in the glove box. See, I knew where y'all were at. I knew that. I wasn't going a day without drinking, and I had been doing that for quite some time. And the idea of me even trying to do that, I knew I couldn't do that. So I can't go to AA. Because I knew y'all'd say something about my drinking, you know? And it's like the line in the book that talks about the jumping off place, which, I can remember reading that and thinking, oh, boy, I've been there. I got there. You know, alcoholism got me there. Where I can't imagine life with alcohol. Okay, guys, I can't imagine life without it, and I couldn't, and it was too much, and it was fear. And like I said, when I say luckily for me, I got arrested again, I mean that with all my heart. Thank God. I got arrested a couple of more times. I'm sitting in a jail in Scottsboro, Alabama, and I come out of, and I come to, y'all notice all the different places I say? I travel a lot out there, just traveling around. Anyway, I ended up in a jail in Scottsboro, Alabama, and I came to, and the only thought in my head was get back to AA. Get back to AA. And it was really cool. Somebody was sharing about that the other night. We were having our meeting, and I'm like, oh, yeah. And that wasn't me. You see, I can't take credit for that thought. That thought was not of me. I know that. I am not. My best thinking doesn't get me to y'all. My best thinking gets me out there. My very best efforts does not bring me into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't. So that thought was not mine. I will not take credit for it. My sister come pick me up out of jail. Sure enough, I ended up back at A&A. And I picked up what I pray is my last white chip. And that was June 29, 2003. I ended up back in treatment, not because I said I think I should go to treatment. I had a man there in the program who I'd known for some time, who had helped me a lot. I ended up back in treatment, and it's getting ready to, hey, what time is it? Because I don't even have a clock or anything. Whoa, I need to get sober. Jeez. Whoa. God. Sorry, y'all. Jeez. No, that's not allowed, man. Don't tell my sponsor. Okay, I'm sorry. Anyway. Don't take the watch. Okay. So I get out of treatment. I don't have a house. And so I end up at a halfway house. And I thought maybe 3 months at this place would be lovely. And I'd get my stuff together. And come to find out 9.5 months is exactly what I needed. And what happened for me, and I can really sum it up, is what happened for me is I had a first step experience. That's what happened for me. I always had this idea of understanding when I took the first drink about this phenomenon of craving and how my body was different. And I could just, that was just so easy for me to tap into. I could totally identify with that, you know. Once I take it in, man, it's on. And I totally identify with that. That was easy for me. And what was happening for me is what had happened before when I would come to. See, I would come to and I would be sober. And therein lies my problem. There's my problem, the mental obsession. See, when I'm not drinking, I am not in a good way at all. Matter of fact, I am worse. Sobriety is my problem, and it has been my entire life. I just didn't know it. And I kept trying to fix it. Well, I did fix it. You can fix sobriety really quick by taking a drink. And that's how I used to fix mine, and that was killing me. You know, so I'm powerless over alcohol, drunk or sober. And how I came to understand that even more so is I would be in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had like a few days, and I would see people like Dirt and some other people in the program, and they would be carrying themselves in such a way that was so attractive. It just blew me away. And I knew I was like them. I knew they were alcoholic, I was alcoholic, and I was struggling, and I felt like I was just so uncomfortable being sober. And I knew they were like me, and they were happy about it, you know? It's like I was watching them, and they were living these awesome lives. And I love that. One of our traditions about attraction rather than promotion. And it was so attractive to me. The way y'all are making this weekend already, this attraction, you know, it's an attraction, just the way we get to carry ourselves, you know. And that's what happened for me, you know. And I wasn't fighting, and I wasn't debating, and I didn't care anymore. You know, just tell me what to do. Tell me what to do. And so God placed a sponsor in my life who absolutely had no problem telling me what to do. and I'm very grateful for that. And she still does that for me today. You know, I didn't pick my sponsor, and that's really important that I don't take credit for that. And I don't have time to tell that story, but she was placed into my life, and we got busy out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, like straight up out the beginning of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And not at chapter 5, which was always a favorite one of mine to start at, because that's how it works, you know, that's where the steps are. But Diane took me to the beginning of this book, and we went through the process of the steps. And like I said, there was no more fighting. You know, Diane taught me how to act in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, when we get there, you get there an hour early. And I thought that was the craziest thing I ever heard of, right? But I couldn't say anything because she was picking me up from the halfway house because I didn't have a ride. So it's like, okay. And so I'm picking you up, getting there, and we go to the meeting early. And what I got to do is see Diane demonstrate to me while we're there early. You see, she was making coffee, and she's like washing the ashtrays, and she's like asking the chairperson if she can help set up. And she started telling me, this is what you do, Jewel, you greet the newcomer. And I'm like, in my head going, I'm the freaking newcomer. But I didn't say that out loud. I said, okay. And so she was demonstrating that, and she said, the meeting starts, and at fellowship group, man, they had a bell. And when that bell rung, we start in the meeting. And when the bell rung again, we done with the meeting. You know? And she said, Jewel, when that bell rings, you better be in your chair and you don't get up again until you hear that bell again. Until you hear it again. She said, you get your coffee, you go use the bathroom, you take care of your business, and you sit down. And in my mind, I'm thinking, wow, Diane really doesn't want me to miss out on anything. She cares. Come to find out, she didn't want me to mess up the meeting for somebody else. You know what she was teaching me? What Diane was teaching me to do was get outside of myself. And she was teaching me instead of telling me. She was teaching me instead of telling me. She was teaching me how to quit being so incredibly selfish and self-centered and think about other people besides myself. Get to the meeting early. Make the coffee for somebody else. Greet another human being. And let me tell you guys something. The closer I am to God on this earth is when I am listening to you and I'm not concerned about me. God, dang, that is so awesome. I am outside of myself in those moments. It's like last night, like when I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she taught me that too. When people are sharing, you need to look at them and listen. Okay. You know? And again, that's how I get out of me. And I got to get out of me. Selfish and self-centeredness is the root of my trouble. Absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt. I got to continue to watch for selfishness and self-centeredness. Not because I've come up with that idea. Luckily for me, the directions are in the book. I don't got to figure none of this stuff out. I didn't have to listen to my sponsor's interpretation of what she thinks the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is. She taught it to me straight up out of this book, and she taught it to me by the way she conducted herself in meetings. And luckily for me, I landed in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Again, I'm going to emphasize a real meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, a tradition-based meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I need Alcoholics Anonymous to stay Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to have it. Not only that, I think it's my responsibility to make sure it's there for generations to come. For generations to come. So thank God that's where I landed. I saw people do this deal, demonstrate this deal. When I sponsor women, this is not based on my interpretation. It says what it says and it means what it means. And if it ain't in the book, then you bring it to my attention. We need to figure something out here. We need to figure something out. You know, so we rocked on through those steps. I'm learning how to live sober. I'm learning how to live sober because I have no clue about it. To be perfectly, I have no clue how to live in this world a sober person. I don't. I don't know how to conduct myself as a responsible person, much less conduct myself as a woman. And I learned how to do that by watching other women. Diane was real big about me sitting with the women. And I remember I'd be sitting with the women, right? I'd be sitting with the women, and they were talking about their lives, and I thought, holy crap. Wow. They've got wives, you know? I mean, later on, I'm going back to the halfway house. You know, and they had purses. I didn't even carry a purse. I had nothing to carry. Now, I don't know if that has any significance to y'all whatsoever, but it's huge for me. I had absolutely nothing. I couldn't even get a valid ID, a driver's license. And I surely didn't have no money. So that's out of the question. Anyway, and so I'm doing this deal, and I'm learning how to be sober, and I'm learning how to be a mom, and I'm taking care of my legal stuff. The very first amends I made was to the city of Scottsboro, Alabama. And guys, I was looking at the possibility of prison. And I was looking at, if not that, because I had four. And that appears to be the magic number in Alabama. And if not that, but definitely jail. And I got so tired of being in fear, I couldn't stand it anymore. And me and Diane talked about it, and I'm like, I want to get this done, you know? And so we talked about it, and I prayed about it, and met with the prosecutor, and I met with the judge, and said, you know, I'm guilty. I was wrong. What can I do to make this right? And I can remember they asked me to step outside of his office for a second, and I can remember thinking, dang, I wish I'd have smoked a cigarette, because I figured I was going to jail. Man, that would have been sweet. But anyway, so they called me back in, and I didn't go to jail. I never spent another day in jail. I have yet to spend another day in jail. They even reduced some of the stuff. How did that happen? And so I'm cleaning up my past. I'm learning how to be a mom. I'm learning how to be a member of society. I'm learning how to live life sober. And as the years rocked on, I still get to continue to do that, guys. I still do the things that I have been taught to do. I try to go to regular meetings regularly. I'm still sponsored. I'm still sponsored by the same woman. She has been with me for 11 years. Bless her heart. She's the first woman, or the first human being on the planet I learned how to have a relationship with. She taught me how to be in a relationship by practicing with her. And the great thing about that is I didn't care what she thought about me. And for where I come from, that was huge, because I always cared about what she thought about me. But I didn't care about her. I didn't care what she thought about me. Because I knew if I let that stand in my way, I would die of untreated alcoholism. I knew I would drink again. So I didn't care. And I still don't care today, because I will call her up with some crazy stuff. I just did before I spoke. I was at a meeting last week, and for some reason, I'm speaking, and there was these guys. I don't know why I'm telling the story, but I am. Anyway, there was these guys over here, and they were chatting it up. And for some reason, I've never done this before, I found myself going, am I bothering y'all? Like in the meeting. And I just never done that before. Anyway, so I was calling her up and going, hey, I did that, you know. And anyway, I still got to do that stuff, you know. I still got to do that stuff. I have a relationship with God that goes beyond anything I could have ever imagined. Anything I ever imagined. The coolest thing that I've come to understand is a necessity. You know, AA is about necessity. I get hooked up with this God because otherwise I'm going to drink and die. I ain't trying to get all good, and I ain't trying to get all religious, and I ain't trying to get all spiritual. I'm just trying to live sober. And there was no arguing and no debating. And the first step is just so devastating, I believe, in my experience. It's just there's no hope in step one, you know. But step two rolls around, and it's like, nice. Yeah. Am I willing to believe? Really? Yes. Yes. And I still need human connection. I still need human connection. I still need guidance. I still need to check with other people, my sponsor, other women in the program who are doing this thing. I still need to pay attention, because it's my belief that God will give me all kinds of messages through all of you. Through all of you. There is evidence of God for me on a daily basis if I pay attention. So I'm the factor in this. I got to pay attention, because there's evidence of God on a daily basis. I've had the most amazing journey through this deal. I'm a grandmother. I have a relationship with my daughters today that goes beyond anything I could have imagined. I'm a Mimi. My Kagan Noel, she is so cute. She's like she's 3 years old. And she'll see me and she'll get all, Mimi! And she'll just run up to me and get all excited. And I get all excited. And she will not ever have to see me drunk as long as I continue to do the things I've been taught to do. That's amazing. That's awesome to me. That can be her experience with her Mimi. Never have to know that. I've made amends to my family. Awesome relationships. You know, I think that's the thing when all is said and done is human relationships. You know, I can make money. I can do jobs. I can get cars and I can have places to live. And all that is just outside stuff. I think when it gets down to it, it's that human relationship. And I've been able to establish my relationships with my family in a way that I never thought was going to be possible. With family members that I never wanted to have a relationship with, to be perfectly honest. But through the process of the steps, I don't get to decide. I'm very glad that I don't get to decide. All I do is do what is asked of me to do. And the outcome is none of my business. And the outcome's really none of my business. I've got an amazing life today. I've went through, it's not been all sunshine and lollipops, and nobody promised me that. You know, I've had people pass away in my family. I got married again in sobriety, and that did not turn out very well, and okay, you know. What I've come to, there's a part in the book talks about matching calamity with serenity. Isn't that amazing? Calamity with serenity. There is no way I can do that. God can do that. God can do that and been able to do that for me. My job is to stay connected. That's what I get to do. I just stay connected and let God do the heavy lifting. I'm in the most amazing relationship today that I could have ever thought of. As a matter of fact, I didn't think of it and I didn't plan it, which is probably why it's so good, because I didn't come up with it. I have an awesome life. I have a little house, a couple of dogs, amazing relationship. Are you kidding me? The simpler, the more appreciation I can have for the simple things, the better off I am. Guys, thank y'all so much for allowing me to speak. I appreciate it.